You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Useless Information Podcast, my collection of fascinating true stories from the flip side of history. My name is Steve Silverman, and today's story is titled The Short Life of Susie Dewey. But before we do that, let's start with today's question of the day. And for today's question of the day, I thought I'd ask you once again about breakfast cereals. And that's not because I'm on a cereal kick. In fact, I hardly ever eat cereal. It's mainly because it ties in well with today's retro sponsor, which just happens to be Wheaties. You know, the so-called breakfast of champions. Now, I'm certain that most of you probably know that Wheaties cereal is famous for featuring prominent athletes on the front of their boxes. But it wasn't always this way. You see, originally, the images were either on the side or the back of the boxes. So my question is fairly simple. Who was the first athlete to appear on the front of a Wheaties box? So here are your choices in alphabetical order. I've also given the sport that each athlete participated in. Now, I should mention that all five of these people had a first for the Wheaties box, but only one was the first to be on the front panel. So is it one, Lou Gehrig for baseball, two, Jesse Owens for track and field, three, Mary Lou Retton for gymnastics, four, Bob Richards for pole vaulting, or five, Eleanor Smith for aviation? Again, who was the first person to be featured on the front of a Wheaties box? Was it one, Lou Gehrig for baseball, two, Jesse Owens for track and field, three, Mary Lou Retton for gymnastics, four, Bob Richards for pole vaulting, or five, Eleanor Smith for aviation? And as always, I'll let you ponder over these five choices for a bit, and I'll let you know the answer to who did what first later in the podcast. And now for today's story that I've titled The Short Life of Susie Dewey. And this story first appeared in the press shortly before Christmas of 1965. So let's start with a little background. Susie Dewey was a 5-year-old girl from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and she was diagnosed with leukemia. While that's highly treatable today, such was not the case back in 1965. Sadly, Susie Dewey's case was diagnosed by the doctors as terminal. When asked what she wanted for Christmas, Susie replied that all she wanted was a big dollhouse. While not an unusual request for a little kid, Susie was one of 8 children, and her parents, that's Mr. and Mrs. George Dewey, they were unable to make her dream come true. Enter the picture her older sister Debbie's boyfriend, that's 18-year-old Roger Zoet, and another friend named Leonard Peshauer, who was also 18 years of age. The two young men had played with Susie, and they were determined to make sure that she got that playhouse for Christmas. They recalled an abandoned little green house. It was just 8 feet by 8 feet, or about 2.5 by 2.5 meters in size, that they had spotted while on a hunting trip near Newaygo. Newaygo is a rural town in central Michigan. And you know exactly what they thought. What a great playhouse that would make for little Susie. So the two boys drove to the site, loaded the little building onto a trailer, and they hauled it back to Grand Rapids. Abandoned or not, one can simply not drive off with someone else's building. You know, someone's sure to notice that a building is missing. and that someone was the owner of that little green house, a guy named Clarence Gifford. The boys soon learn that the house was used long ago by children who were waiting for their school bus to arrive. While it was no longer used, the little building had become something of a landmark to the people of Nuevo. Once the news spread that the little green house was missing, the two boys knew that they were in big trouble. So they were quickly arrested, they were thrown in the slammer, and each was sentenced to 35 years in prison. Okay, not really. They were never arrested. The two boys quickly notified the police that they had the building, and their families arranged for its return. Each boy paid fines of $37.50 to the Nuevo Justice Court, and they were freed to go. This was clearly a case of the boys thinking with their hearts and not with their brains. Soon after the story made the news, Chicago Cub Scout Pack 3189 took it upon themselves to fulfill Susie's wish. But this time it was done legally. The boys built a replica of a 10-story office building, and that was complete with a revolving front door. The building, which was delivered to Susie by two Grand Rapids policemen, stood nearly as tall as Susie did, and you can bet that she was thrilled with her new dollhouse. 1 year later, Susie was once again back in the news. By this time, her health had turned for the worse. You see, the aggressive treatments that doctors had given her had caused her to lose nearly all of her fluffy hair. She was nearly bald, and she refused to leave the house unless she was wearing a hood over her head. All Susie wanted for Christmas this year was to get her brown hair back. How sad is that? The obvious solution was for Susie to get a wig, but unfortunately the family couldn't afford it on Dad's meager car salesman's salary. Within just 24 hours of the story being spread by the various news agencies, the public response was overwhelming. The family was barraged with phone calls, and there were offers of wigs from all over the country. Frank Sinatra himself offered to buy her a wig or, quote, anything else she wants for Christmas. Wow. A group of students at Hope College collected $76.56. That's about $550 in today's money to help her buy that wig. A local department store said that Susie could come in and get any wig she wanted for free. And then a wiggery in Detroit offered her the same deal. Another wig manufacturer in Tulsa, Oklahoma offered her, quote, one of the finest wigs in the United States. The International Furniture Upholsters Union kicked in $25 to start a fund to purchase gifts for little Susie. And within a couple of days, Susie was at Wurzburg's department store being fitted for her first wig. And best of all, the family had been contacted by an agent for the comedian Jerry Lewis. It seems that Jerry Lewis wanted to fly the entire family out to Hollywood and they could spend Christmas with him and his family. Even better, there was a promise of a trip to Disneyland. The family was nearly all packed and ready to go when the news broke that, get this, it was all a big hoax. Neither Jerry Lewis or his agent ever made the offer to go to Hollywood. Now, I have to say, how can anyone do such a cruel thing to a dying girl? It's just downright cruel. But Susie was never told that she was a victim of a hoax. There was no need to, because 2 days after Christmas, she was off to California. And this time, it was for real. Accompanied by Mom, Dad, and her 4-year-old sister, Katie, the Dewey clan landed at Los Angeles Airport on December 26th. It seems that an anonymous benefactor from Los Angeles had heard of the hoax and paid the entire airfare. Not only did they get to go to Disneyland, they were also invited as guests to Marineland of the Pacific, Universal Studios, Knott's Berry Farm, and other local amusement parks. By this time, Susie was quite frail and she required the use of a wheelchair. But that did not diminish her excitement in the least. She went on several of Disney's rides, which included the Mad Hatter's teacups, where she urged the spinning teacup to go faster, faster. She watched the Disneyland Christmas Parade and Old West Show and the Golden Horseshoe Review. I guess one could say that in the end, Susie Dewey got everything that she wished for, even if that involved a stolen playhouse and a nasty hoax. But there was one thing that money and all the publicity in the world couldn't buy. Less than 2 months after her trip to Disneyland, Susie Dewey took her final breath at 4:30 a.m. on February 22nd of 1967. Her mother, father, and uncle were at her side. Her mom was quoted as saying, in the 2 weeks that she'd been dying at the University Hospital, she never cried once. She added, but just before she died at 4:30, she said, "Mommy, I want to die." Susie then succumbed to the disease that she had so bravely fought for 18 months. She was just 6 years old. Very, very sad. Useless, useful, I'll leave that for you to decide.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
And now for a few words from our retro sponsor.
Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, is on the air, in person. Fellows, girls, hang on for thrills. Wheaties bring you a story of champions in action. Today, we're calling the role of champions of the airwaves, of champion transport pilots who fly their great transport planes across America. First, Jack Knight, crack million-mile pilot of United Airlines.
And Jack Knight says, Wheaties are my dish for the next million miles.
Number two, David Harris, pilot of American Airlines.
And David Harris says, whenever I want a big breakfast that hits the right spot and tastes well, just lead me to Wheaties and I'll show you some real action.
Number three, Jimmy Garrigan, top-notch pilot of the Transcontinental Western Airways, Lindbergh Line.
And Jimmy Garrigan says, try that sky-high million-dollar Wheaties dish yourself. You'll agree that Wheaties taste great.
Yes, and there are more, lots more. Some of America's greatest sky aces of today say Wheaties are the dish they like to eat. Try Wheaties yourself. Eat them that famous breakfast of champions way with plenty of milk or cream, sugar, and sliced bananas. You'll say like champions of the air say, Wheaties sure taste great.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties? For wheat is the best food of man. They're crispy, they're crunchy the whole year through. Jack Hampton never tires of them, and neither will you. So just buy Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land.
That commercial for Wheaties is from an episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, which ran on radio from 1933 to 1951. Now, Jack Armstrong was a popular athlete at Hudson High School who somehow managed to travel the globe and save the world from all of those dastardly villains. Now, a little piece of trivia about the show is that the first person to portray Jack Armstrong was Jim Amici. He's the brother of famed actor Don Amici. Depending on the source you check, Wheaties was either accidentally invented in 1921 or 1922. That's when a health clinician in Minneapolis, Minnesota, spilled a wheat bran mixture onto a hot stove, causing it, of course, to cook, and then he got this really tasty flake. It took George Comack, who was the head miller at the Crosby Washburn Company, some 36 attempts to get these flakes strong enough so they could be boxed and shipped. Think about it, nobody really wants a box full of wheat bran dust, so they had to get it just right. Then a company-wide contest was held to name the new cereal. Catchy names such as Nutties and Gold Medal Wheat Flakes were suggested, but ultimately Wheaties was chosen as the best. Credit for the name goes to Jane Bossman. She was the wife of the company's export manager. Wheaties became associated with sports quite quickly. They first started advertising with local Minneapolis baseball teams before advertising nationwide on radio. In 1933, Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, was created to further help promote Wheaties. In fact, Jack Armstrong was the first person ever to appear on a Wheaties box. That was in 1934, but since he's a fictional character, he really doesn't count. Which leads us to the answer to today's question of the day. And I had asked who is the first athlete ever to be featured on the front of a Wheaties box. And your choices were 1. Lou Gehrig for baseball, 2. Jesse Owens for track and field, 3. Mary Lou Retton for gymnastics, 4. Bob Richards for pole vaulting, and 5. Eleanor Smith for aviation. Lou Gehrig was indeed the first real athlete to appear on a box in 1934, but it wasn't on the front. Eleanor Smith appeared on the box that same exact year as the first woman, but again, she wasn't on the front. In 1936, Jesse Owens became the first black athlete to appear, but once again, he did not land on the front. In 1984, Mary Lou Retton became the first woman to appear on the front of the box, but she was not the first person to do so, which leaves us with just 1 choice. That honor belongs to Bob Richards. He received the honor in 1958. And now for a few totally useless, yet totally true tidbits from history. It's time for what I like to call News of the Weird Past. And today's stories all involve blind drivers. Yes, you heard that correctly. People that were legally blind and could still drive a vehicle. And our first story is dated July 18th of 1949, when it's reported that 26-year-old Nelson E. Schultz was driving a truck at 7:30 in the morning on a dirt road about 3.5 miles west of Cashtown, Pennsylvania. Passengers in the truck included his mother, wife, and 4 brothers and sisters. They were on their way to pick cherries. But there was a problem. Nelson was legally blind and he couldn't see the road. So he had a great solution. He had his 11-year-old brother Merle sit on his lap and he allowed Merle to steer. But since Merle was too short to reach the pedals of the truck, his older brother Nelson did that part for him. So it should come as no surprise with a boy steering and a blind man controlling the gas and the brake that an accident was about to occur. In fact, the truck flipped over. And sadly, their 4-year-old brother Barry was killed. Everyone else except for the blind driver Nelson were injured, although none of them were seriously injured. Police charged the younger half of the driving duo with driving without a license, and they charged the older half with permitting an unlicensed driver to operate the vehicle. A grand jury later handed down a charge of involuntary manslaughter against the older brother Nelson. He was found guilty and was given a 3-year suspended sentence. Our next story occurred on May 23rd of 1958 in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It was reported that a traffic officer named Loyal Nelson pulled over a weaving car. To his shock and amazement, the driver was legally blind. Now, the man sitting in the passenger seat claimed ownership of the car and said that the blind man was curious to know what it was like to drive, so he let him. While the names of the 2 men were not published, the vehicle's owner was quoted as stating he just wanted to get the feel of the wheel. There's probably no great shock here, but Officer Nelson arrested the car's owner and charged him with allowing an unauthorized person to operate a motor vehicle. The blind driver was not charged, however. And our last tidbit for today occurred on April 6th of 1962, and that's when it was announced by L.A. Billings, the then superintendent of the Kansas State Motor Vehicle Department, that there were 128 blind people in the state that currently held driver's licenses. This finding was released after an article appeared a few weeks earlier in the newspaper, and it compared the list of Kansas men that were legally blind with another list of Kansas men that held licenses. The story's author, Ray Wingerson, estimated that about 5% of the legally blind men in the state held valid driver's licenses. Some were still driving, while most just renewed their licenses for identification purposes. So you're probably wondering, how did a blind man get a driver's license? Well, it turns out it's due to a glitch in the law. It seems that any driver in the state that had their license prior to 1949, that was when they changed the regulations in the state, they could simply renew their license by mailing in payment, and then, of course, they kept their driver's license. Superintendent Billings said that letters were immediately sent to 103 of these drivers to notify them that their licenses had been canceled. Now, the article doesn't mention what happened to the other 25, why they didn't get notification.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I hope you found today's story on Susie Dewey interesting. I certainly did. If you'd like to read more true stories just like this, please be sure to get a copy of one of my books. They are Einstein's Refrigerator and Lindbergh's Artificial Heart. Both written by me, Steve Silverman, and they're available from your local bookseller, online, and from your local library. As always, I'll post additional resources on Facebook. That's facebook.com/uselessinformationpodcast. Useless Information Podcast, that's all one word. If you'd like to contact me for some reason, you can do that through Facebook, or you can email me at useless@steve.silverman.name. That's useless@steve.silverman.name. Lastly, I'd just like to thank everyone who took the time to write to me about my invention, offering their words of support. I did show it at Super Zoo about 3 weeks ago. That's a trade show in Las Vegas, and I think it went pretty well. I have three companies that are interested in manufacturing it for me, one in the United States, one in Mexico, and one in Asia. I'm going to start with the American one and see where that goes, and then I'll go from there. There were a bunch of companies that were interested, both small retailers and some very, very large ones. I had someone from Amazon, Best Buy, Petco, PetSmart, Bed Bath & Beyond, and a few other big companies stop by and ask me to contact them when I finally have this thing in production. Now, I do know that a lot of great inventions go nowhere, and there are a lot of dumb ones that earn people millions. I have no idea where mine will go, but if I don't take the chance, then I'll never know. I'll always be curious for the rest of my life. Anyway, I thank you for listening and for your support, and hopefully you'll tune in the next time. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.